You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Greetings, hello. I am Captain Dean. I am at Spencer's Coffee House on a beautiful, sunny spring afternoon, drinking my extra creamy hot mocha. And I am sitting here with a very, very talented singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, with over 10 years in the Bowling Green music scene. Been in bands like Miss Umbrella, Downtown Handshake, The Black Shades, Jamie Resch and the Frontmen, Chuck Falcon and the Machines, sort of Damocles.
Damocles, yeah.
Pretty OK's and the Daddy Sisters. I'm talking about Chick Falcon. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Captain.
Thank you for being here. I've been waiting for this episode.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be great. Awesome.
Well, they all start with the super awesome question of where are you from?
Originally from Shelbyville, Kentucky, a small town right outside of Louisville.
Yeah, kind of in between Louisville and Frankfort, right?
Yeah. Just right there. It's a good little spot.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you ended up down south at some point?
Yeah. At the beginning of high school, I moved to Beaver Dam, Kentucky.
Oh.
Moved in with my mom and did some school in there. And
did you learn anything?
Well, still, I don't know.
That's another episode, right?
Right. I did that and lived in like my parents. After I graduated high school, I lived in my parents' abandoned fitness center and commuted back and forth to Owensboro. To Owensboro and went to community college and played some music up there in Owensboro and then till graduated, then moved to Bowling Green.
And what year was that?
2007.
So you've been here since 2007.
Yeah, January 2007.
And prior to you moving down here, as your childhood, you know, what got you into music? When did you start discovering you were a musician, and what were you being influenced by in the beginning?
Well, my dad always had like some great music, you know, going on in the house. He had, he had the Stones, and he loved the Beatles pre Maharishi.
Oh.
That's just what he liked. I don't know. And he had Herman.
It
and
did the, get a little weird. Huh?
Yeah. He had Herman and the Hermits going. You know, had Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs,
wow.
And tons and tons of Chuck Berry and Elvis. And Chuck Berry is still to this day just like
absolutely
the one. Love Chuck Berry.
Absolutely, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, he's the poet. You know, rock and roll poet, and just. His delivery is fantastic. He wrote that riff that most rock and roll is like based around. You know, it's just it's awesome.
He, in my opinion, is the king.
Oh,
of rock and roll.
He is the king.
Little Richard is probably the queen of rock and roll.
Right. I love Little Richard.
I get the Elvis thing, but I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah,
Chuck Berry really should be a much much bigger, important factor.
Somebody else of Sun Records that Dad always would play is Jerry Lee Lewis. Love Jerry Lee, and he's like he was so punk. Like he was just like
absolutely.
He lit his piano and then played it. Like Jimi Hendrix lit his guitar and then just he burned it. But yeah. Jerry Lee burned it and played it. It's like that's crazy.
What kills me about the past rock and roll history stuff is that PA systems were like. New.
Oh, yeah.
Or barely invented, barely existed at the time. I can't imagine what it must have been like to be in a band like that where you had two microphones and one was for vocal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's cool.
It's wild.
It's definitely captured well in recording, but I just can't imagine what it would have been like live. Must have been a very interesting sound, you know?
Yeah.
To hear all that.
People were flipping out, I'm sure, you know? That's...
I'm glad
wild.
There was a lot of video captured in that. But, okay, so when did, what age did you kind of get into?
Well, I got into performing, I moved, I guess this was like 2000, the year 2000. I had a friend who played, he played music. I thought he was cool because, you know, he was a grunger. He had, he was into Nirvana and Green Day and... Had you know he just looked cool and then he came came. He was a Shelbyville friend and came to visit me in Beaver Dam. And I already had a couple friends there that also played music, but I still didn't play anything. Yeah. I mean, I think I had a guitar, but I wasn't good at it. And what happened was my friend from Shelbyville came down, and then we had a friend who was having a birthday party and they wanted a band. So there was a guitar, a bass, and a drummer, and then there was me. And none of them wanted to sing, so I was now the singer. They said, you are the singer. So I was like, okay, so what are we playing? And at this time, I wasn't familiar with any of these bands that like they wanted to play because like I didn't listen to it. They wanted to play, you know, some Green Day and some Nirvana and AC/DC. Wow. And like none of that stuff was played in our house. So it's like, so what happened was like we printed out the lyrics and I just read them off because, I didn't sing them because I didn't know the melody. So I was just like, here we are now, entertain us. I feel stupid and contagious. You know, just
he did the coffee house jazz version.
Or like the
spoken word.
Yeah, like also AC/DC's Big Balls. We played that. Just or like what is it? I'm back from the sack. Don't you know it's great to be black, be back, or whatever it is. Like, whatever he says, I don't know.
He's like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I can dig it. Just whatever they say.
So how old were you at that point?
I was, I'd say like 13 or 14. Oh, like, no, probably 14. Yeah,
yeah, junior high?
Yeah. Like, well, I think like just when freshman year of high school, whenever that is. Cause, wait, maybe it's 15. Whatever freshman year,
but
is,
you're like, teenage. You're a teenager.
Yeah, I am a teenager. Yeah.
And so before you even, like you said, you owned a guitar, but you just kind of had it.
Yeah.
But before you really dove into being the musician that you have become, it kind of started with just singing
on
the fly with some friends for fun.
Right, and then
what an interesting way to get into it.
Yeah, it was weird, but. Once I finally learned how to play songs, like I was, first into Green Day, Blink-182, Jimmy Eat World, The Beatles, and I was just learning some of those songs, and it was around, like, I think I played in a cover band with like my stepdad and some of his friends, like when we would play like little talent shows and things, and then when people like thought I was somebody by playing like covers of bands that I loved, I was like, this is it for me. Yeah. It's like so hopefully one day I can write some songs that people will react to like they are reacting to this stuff.
You are.
Oh, cool. Let me just,
as of the day that we are sitting here, I would say in the last 2 to 3 weeks of this moment, I've heard the Daddy Sisters come out of more people's mouths than anything.
That's awesome.
So whatever you've discovered in your youth and set out to do, congratulations.
Yeah.
You're doing it.
That's awesome. That makes me feel
I
great.
I would say you are probably on the top of everyone's list around
that's
here right
cool.
now because
God.
it's awesome.
That's really rad.
So you get started fairly young and accidental.
Yeah.
When did all of that happen? Like, when did you even pick up the guitar and realize you could play it? I mean, was it easy? Was it natural for you to do?
Well, it wasn't just like, okay, the first guitar. Okay, I got a guitar, and then I could pick out melody
right.
like that, and that's so that's something I could do just right off the bat. Like, I remember the song that I was I was so happy because like I figured out the melody to like. Get Back on guitar, and then I showed it to like what I was playing I could recognize it as that song, but I was like, showing it to my mom, I was like, check it out, and she was like, that's nice, and she I had no idea what I was playing because it's like unrecognizable, but
it made sense to you, like
yeah,
you could hear it,
so it was I felt like maybe I can do this, and I don't know. I think I just I learned a couple chords and just figured out how to get with it, and then that was I was like, hey, I can play some
just
stuff.
Kind of took it off. Huh?
Yeah, kind of took it off. And then my first guitar. I remember like my stepdad. He went to the pawn shop and got it was a guitar. It's called the brand was Washburn, and it was called the Maverick series.
I don't recall that one.
Yeah, it's called the Washburn Maverick series. It was like a cherry, like sunburst. It had two pickups, a volume and a tone, and then a pickup selector. And then there was a small Park practice amp. And I think that's a subsidiary of Marshall.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, I had that, and like that's before I knew that there was like any reason to own more than one guitar. Whether it's like because like one guitar, that's all you need.
Some people live by that rule.
Right.
I'm like you. I think it's cool to have choices.
Yeah.
Sounds and all.
Yeah.
That stuff.
Yeah. Just plug it in and plug in the guitar, and then I think there may have been some overdrive I could get, but yeah. there wasn't really tremolo or nothing
so
like that.
So would you say it came fairly natural to you to just kind of learn on your
own?
Like my
stepdad, he taught me a couple chords, and then after that,
that's all you need.
A couple chords, and then the Ramones.
Write an entire record with
right, a couple right. Like I wrote, or no, no, sorry. I would if there was a song that I really liked, I would like get on the internet and figure out what the tabs were, and then a lot of times, I would say about 30% of the time they're wrong or they're in the wrong key or something, and half of listening to it and half of having the tabs, just figuring it out, and until you just get it,
So. Did that help lead more into writing your own
stuff? Absolutely. Yeah. I was having a hard time like writing lyrics because you don't want to sound like you don't want to sound too dumb, but you don't want to sound too cool, you don't want to sound there's all these things that's like you don't want to be too anything, but and then like
I'd say in the beginning it's difficult to find yourself.
Yeah.
On top of having an enormous amount of influences coming at you from all different directions.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like you're swimming through just music from the 40s to the 2000s.
Yeah, there's so much.
And you're finding yourself through all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, a cool time to be alive.
Right. You know what I mean? Definitely, definitely.
Because there's so much.
Yeah. I think I wrote my first song whenever I was a sophomore in high school. It was about, I contracted mono somehow, and there I was. And I think so. I have no idea how it goes, wouldn't dare even sing it if I did because it's probably terrible.
If two people had mono and made out, would that be in
stereo? Yeah, that's a great stereo. That's great. That's awesome. That's pretty good.
So let's say you get started. Uh-huh. You discover you've got something for uh-huh. this. You're a teenager. Mm-hmm. But then fast forward through all of the time of getting going, mm-hmm. you end up in Bowling Green.
Yes.
In 2007.
Yes.
And at that point, where did you stand in the music field?
Well,
because it seems like you were immediately like in a band and playing
so
you were already kind of graduated to that point,
right? Well, what happened was I was in a like back home before I moved right before I moved here I was in a band called Miss Umbrella, and we got offered to play or do a interview with Koufax on Revolution for like local shots, and that was big city, coming up and doing that, because like back home we don't even get college radio. It's like that far away. I mean, like, and plus if you play any kind of rock and roll at all, you're like the devil. Like me and my stepdad were in his band, and like we're of course going to go to hell because we were
the outcast of
because we were playing some Green Day and some Nirvana or whatever. And I remember like we also played like Billy Idol's like White Wedding. That song kicks ass. It's so good. That bass line, doo 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 doo. It's so good. But So we came up here, and the other two guys in Miss Umbrella stayed back, but I was still here, and I was just trying to find someone to play with. And the first group that I joined was Jordan Penley. I just filled in on bass and I just did that, and then I worked at Bread and Bagel because I met him through and then that's where I met Scott Gardner, and we were jamming, and then that ended up like He's like, hey.
And they had, like, open mics and stuff there. Oh, so yeah. So I guess you met some people through that, too, right?
Yeah. Like, well, I went there to an open mic, and that's where I met Artemis and Andrea.
Yeah.
Like, they think Andrea was, or they were doing Stereo Typewriter at the time.
Okay.
And, like, I always found myself in, like, I mean, I guess in Bowling Green you have, like, different music circles. Like, everybody's part of the same community.
Right.
But there's just definitely different circles, and I've, like, found myself in all the circles at one point, you know, played with, like, most everyone.
That's
so, yeah,
cool.
It's cool because, like, Bowling Green is, like, has awesome musicians.
It's
insane.
It's absolutely insane. And that's the joy of this podcast. And when Russell started it, I was like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That needs to be done because it's documenting history.
Right.
From every angle, every musician, every generation, every genre of music, it's all being captured in like a time capsule kind of thing.
Yeah.
And by God, you needed an episode.
Well, there back home, like before, okay, me and Logan played bass in Miss Umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And we were each other's competition in high school.
Okay.
He played guitar. Yeah, and so we both drove each other because, like, we're the best guitar players in town.
Yeah.
Or at least in our age group. Like, we were into, you know, Led Zeppelin and, like, we were both into Led Zeppelin. And then, like, he started liking more stuff like Rush and Yes. Like, stuff that's more, like, more technical,
right?
And then I started like diving more into, I was in the White Stripes and the Ramones and, like, you know, the Clash and I loved, like, I think I was more into like the early rock and roll, like the songwriting,
simplicity,
simplicity
and the intensity.
That's how I've always
looked at it. Like,
that's me, because, like,
I would prefer that over complicated shit any day.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Because to me, it's like, that's cool,
uh-huh,
and I can admire those musicians, but it's not me. It doesn't
suit me
as a person or a musician, you know. So,
but me and Logan, we saved up $500 each. And then went up to, we saw this thing in Guitar World magazine, Berklee School of Music, week-long guitar workshop. So we're going up there thinking that we're, like, you know, the baddest ass, you know, on the block. Mm. So we go up there to Boston, where there's people from all around the world.
Yep.
So we go, and you have to audition whether you're in group shitty, group medium, or group awesome. Well, we auditioned. Logan got in group shitty, and I got in group medium.
Not bad.
So he came back and basically only played bass. However, I don't think bass is, like, it's not, I mean, it can be a boring instrument, but Paul McCartney, hell.
No.
Like, that, Paul is, like, the dude is for me, and he's just, I don't know.
I would say growing up on the Beatles, that had to be,
really
stood out to you.
Yeah. I mean, I played bass in, like, the Pretty OKs, and, like, that was, like, my favorite. I mean, like, that was it for me.
Right.
Like, I love playing bass in that band, and then in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, like, for the sort of Damocles.
I fucked that name up. I'm sorry.
I requested me play bass in that because it's just.
And
so
I forgot to mention at the beginning that you also, I saw you play bass with former friend of
Young
America.
Oh, yeah, former friend. I forgot to
mention their name earlier, and I'm really sorry about that.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I've seen you play bass, I've seen you play guitar, and I just recently saw your beautiful Ludwig,
olive green
Ludwig drum set.
Oh, yeah, I'm still working on that. Like,
drumming's kind of new for you, or just hands-on drumming? Like, you work with machines and...
Right, yeah. I mean, there's always been, like, a kit, like, around that's
right.
But, like, the first time I got on it, I was just kind of like, you know, I can kind of do it, but then I was never, like, awesome.
Right.
And, like, I was, like, it's kind of like after you've developed your skills on guitar and then you jump on something else, you're like,
yeah,
I should be just as good. Or as you get this feeling, you're like, yeah.
No, totally
not. So, still been learning that. And, like, I could, like, I have total, like, faith that I could go up and play a 3/4 beat or a 4/4 beat, and, like, I can start and finish when I need to.
There you go.
But that's about it right now.
But so going back to that, you come back from the Berklee experience.
Yeah.
And you're
playing
bass,
right?
Like, by choice, right?
Right. Yes. Like, well, see, I came back not wanting to be a shredder because I wanted to be a shredder at that time. Like, and
really opened your eyes up to like the finding yourself. Like, what am I meant to be? What kind of musician am I?
Yeah,
and you found yourself.
Like, I bought two records while I was up there. One was Velvet Underground's Loaded and Television's Marquee Moon. And those are like, those are it. Those are still two of my favorite albums to this day.
I can see why.
Yeah, or like, to this day. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, and I remember I was always into the Ramones because they looked cool. And like, I remember I bought like this, like my dad was not into punk rock, but I bought like a two disc greatest hits of them.
Yeah.
And dad's like, two discs of punk rock. I bet that's going to be real good. I was like, you know, I bet it is. I bet it's gonna be great.
What I liked about the Ramones is they had that 50s doo-wop kind of thing, but with the punk intensity.
Yeah, because that's what they were trying.
But punk was like grunge at that point. It's like, it's just a title.
Yeah, yeah, you know, you're right.
It wasn't really a existing genre of music. It was just a fucking rock and roll.
Yeah, it's just rock and roll. That's all it is. Yes.
But yeah, I get that.
Yeah,
I'm surprised he didn't kind of pick up. If he listened to him,
well,
he would have picked up, like, this sounds like really fast-paced Chuck Berry.
Yeah, that's, I don't know.
Or what it was, like a doo-wop band, I guess you could compare it to. But, I mean, they just had that vibe to me.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the first time I heard the Ramones. This is great.
Yeah.
Good experience. So anyway, you're getting all kinds of knowledge from all different sides, but coming out of Boston with Television and the Velvet Underground as a new discovery.
That's
a good experience.
Yeah, because like the internet was around, but like I didn't like.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what year was that?
That was
around the time
that was 2003.
Oh, three.
2003. Like, because I guess it was. I graduated in 2004.
Okay,
and so like the fall of 2003, we go up there. And, well, maybe it was.
But it was prior to you coming to Bowling Green, right?
Yeah. So.
So when you did come to Bowling Green, what were you primarily doing?
Trying to pay rent.
And what was the first band you got in with?
Oh, the first like band of like people that I didn't really know was probably Downtown Handshake, I guess.
Okay.
Like that's. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And then I ended up playing with, there's every so often they did a thing called The Color Orange. It was like Zach Lindsay and a lot of people. And usually what it would be, they would have a theme that particular, like they would like learn this many covers and there would be a theme of like one particular thing.
Okay.
Like the one that I did was like old rock and roll from like, you know, the Sonics and like Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, and I joined as a keyboard player, but I was actually more of a keyboard owner because I'm not really awesome. I can get by, but yeah,
did what you had to do.
I did what I had to do. A lot of holding one key and pointing my finger at the audience because like you can fake it. Yeah,
that's rock and roll.
That's rock and roll. Yeah, I'm a rock and roll keyboard player.
Exactly.
Yeah,
damn good one too. So that was Downtown Handshake.
Yeah, Downtown. I played.
Cool name. I think that's a really cool name.
Yeah. Like Tony had that name going, and the band.
Yeah, who was in the band?
Well, the band was kind of already around. Like,
okay.
They were Decade of Experts and Assassins at one point, and then it was Downtown Handshake, and then the band kind of split up. And then when it reformed, it was like Scott Gardner, Tony Smith, Zach. God, I'm blanking on his last name.
Dude, this happens every time I talk to somebody.
Yeah, and then me.
I forget club names. That's my weakness in these episodes.
Yeah,
I'm like,
that
Zach player.
Greer. That's who it was. Zach Greer.
Thank you.
Got it.
Okay, and that was what? Like you said, 2007.
That one was probably 2008.
So not long after you'd moved here?
Yeah, because I think I was doing more, like, Miss Umbrella was still, like, my thing.
Yeah.
Like, but they would have to drive up and play.
Yeah, from here to what? Beaver Dam, right? About an hour.
Yeah. And we would, Yeah, that band, like, we would, like, we played, like, in Owensboro some, then we'd play at Bread and Bagel. And then we played this thing called Next Big Nashville, but we didn't play as ourselves. We played as, like, Caitlin Rose's backing band.
Oh, okay.
And she's, like, she's kind of a bigger name now. And she's, like, super great. Like, she's a great songwriter. But, God, I still remember this show. Like, we practiced. We had these songs down. We had them down. Well, she put on some fresh new strings on her acoustic guitar, and like, she's not a guitar whiz, she's a songwriter, but she can do it, and she's, you know, she's good,
right?
However, she didn't stretch out the strings. Yeah. So we're playing these songs, and like, we're all looking at each other like, this sounds terrible. And she looks back at us. She says, play the right notes.
Oh,
I'm like,
God.
We are. And then, like, in the middle of the song, or after the first song was over, I basically just palm muted, just played a percussive little thing because I didn't know what the hell to do.
Oh, my God.
And then, like, her dad, like, after that song, took her guitar and tuned it, and all the other songs were fine.
Wow.
It's like, I felt so embarrassed.
Sometimes you just learn lessons the hard way.
Oh, my God.
Stretch the strings.
Yeah, stretch the strings. She's like, play the right notes.
So, Downtown Handshake.
Yeah.
Awesome name. Pretty good band-wise.
Oh, yeah,
did
it was
you
a super fun
band. How long did that last for you?
I was in that band for about a year.
Kay.
Yeah, something like that.
And did that lead into your first major outing, or what happened after that?
Well, I got added into, like, well... What was it? I got into Sleeper Agent because, like, I don't know. This is weird. Like Tony said, "Hey, we need a new guitar player, and I don't feel like meeting anybody else. You play guitar, so you want to be in the band?" I'm like, "Yeah, that's fine." I was like, "That's
best audition ever."
Yeah. So like, we're in the band, and
Sleeper Agent was doing really.
Oh yeah, they were big things
at that point.
That was like whenever like Justin was still the singer.
Yeah.
Well, We played, and then like what, like I ended up like, I think that like Sleeper Agent at one point was like on a hiatus, and then me, Mike Dean, and Mike O'Brien of Sleeper Agent, we decided to start a cover band to just get money, like but like we never ever played any shows, and we learned like three songs or something. But like I ended up saying, hey, I got these original songs, would y'all want to play these? And they're like, yeah, that sounds great. And so that ended up being like the Black Shades.
Yeah.
And
band.
That was one I really like. I cut my teeth on as far as like being like learning.
But it was really active. Like,
yeah,
I saw the name all the time. And I was telling you before we started rolling that I printed your T-shirts. And
yeah.
We didn't meet. We didn't talk.
I know. You should have been ahead of me.
I was back in production, but the place I worked at printed the T-shirts for the Black Shades.
That's super rad.
And so your Black Shades T-shirts were printed by me.
That's super cool.
Some of them, anyway.
Yeah, I think we still have a couple, but they're the ones like we just.
That's
could,
cool.
Yeah, still got some.
So that was like you said earlier, about 10 years ago, right?
Yes. Do you remember the image that was on the shirt? Like what?
There was a motorcycle.
Yes.
And
yes,
I think one was, I guess, a pair of sunglasses or something.
Yeah,
that
that's right. Yeah.
I remember those.
Yeah, we had like about three or four designs in total.
Yeah. I know I at least printed two.
Because
I remember it. Because when you print 100 shirts or whatever, you see it all day.
Yeah, the sunglasses.
You
like
walk
that was,
out of there and you close your eyes and you can see
them. Oh, I know. Yeah, the sunglasses one was maybe like my favorite one. That one, also, there's a lightning bolt girl we did. That was like through pit printing. But
okay.
The sunglasses one, that was like, I think around that time I was trying to like, I guess the Black Shade just started off as being just like, they were just like just a rock band. I mean,
right.
I liked the music that I liked. And
oh,
like,
man, it was I loved it.
Cool.
It was a big thing to me because it was like, okay, I can get into this band. Yeah. I was actually just listening to your CD the other day.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be weird like whenever we're playing our first gig in like a couple years, like this coming June.
Yeah.
And it's weird whenever you...
This may air before that. So
oh, yeah.
This is going to work out good.
Well, whenever you like play songs that you wrote like 9 or 10 years ago, you're kind of like, I don't know if, like, well, because you're in a different headspace then, and like, it's like, I feel like I've progressed since then, but like, you know, they're just like...
Memory lane.
Yes, memory lane, yeah.
So, again, the Black Shades were a pretty dominant band in this music scene. And that was, again, like, what, 2000?
It's 2000, yeah, the fall of 2009. And that was our first show we played at a house.
Okay.
And then...
And who was in the Black Shades?
At that time, it was Mike O'Brien, Mike Dean, Jared Kowalski, and me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you guys lasted a pretty good while.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, at least
what? 3-4 years, maybe?
Well, with that lineup, it lasted for about, I guess, until, like, the following summer.
Okay.
I think summer, or... Then, like, exit Mike O'Brien, enter Jerry Kessinger, now of the Japanese Schoolgirls.
Yeah.
And also enter Mike Thomas. And I don't think... Yeah, Michael Thomas. He I think the only bands he's really been in was, like, that and the Pretty OKs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
he got in the band because he had a white guitar. I just made this random strict dress code. It's so silly. But, like, you got a white guitar.
No, again, it's like, yeah, you have a good vision. Like, you're good at the entertainment factor of it all. So, I'm totally down with it. So, how long, I mean, in general, with the lineup changes and everything, how long did the Black Shades...
Because
technically, it's still kind of alive.
Yeah, we're all, like, friends and stuff now. So, like, I think it
ended, but it didn't necessarily break up.
Right. I think 2012, 2013, one of those.
That's not bad.
And since then, like, I mean, that was, like, my main deal.
I mean, I saw your name everywhere. I mean, you guys were really, you know, active at the time.
Yeah.
Our scene, again, was kind of going through this phase of fresh and new,
right,
and a lot of things were going on, and of course, like, you know, Sleeper Agent just had their kind of stardom kind of leap, and, you know, Cage was doing good at that point.
Yeah,
it was just a lot of, it was a good time.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff.
The scene kind of reinvents itself over,
yeah,
like a roller coaster in a way. It goes through these periods, but then when it's good, it's good.
Yeah,
and the Black Shades were part of the good time.
It felt great. Like the... There was, you know, great venues around. I mean, Tidballs has been like a home.
That's
like John
definitely.
Tidball and like all the boys are just like.
What
so
else was
awesome.
Around at that point that you all played? Brewing Company, anything like that?
Oh, like I played that with like a cover band.
Yeah.
That's like, whatever.
So you guys did a lot of like regional stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, we did. Black Shades. We played like Nashville a lot.
Yeah.
Cincinnati a lot. We did like a tour through Canada.
Cool.
Yeah, we did that.
But Tidballs was kind of the home for you.
Oh yeah, that was. And then, oh my gosh, we booked like whenever. I guess at the tail end of the Black Shades, we were a three piece, and that's whenever I started booking for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's whenever I think I booked two tours, and those two tours we actually didn't come back in the negative. We actually came back with some money.
Wow! Congratulations.
Yeah, I was like, holy crap, because usually every single show we did was like just wah wah. I mean, no, it was cool, but the out of town stuff was just kind of like
yeah. But you were doing your thing and you were rolling the dice.
Right.
Know?
Like one of the best out of town shows we did, we played up in like New York.
Yeah.
Well, we booked a weekend. We played in Manhattan on Friday.
Nice.
We played with a Guns N' Roses cover band and we played to like absolutely no one. And we got paid absolutely nothing. And then Saturday, the next day, we played in Brooklyn. This place, it was like us and then three other Brooklyn bands. This place was called Live at Shea Stadium. It was like a show space, like a big warehouse.
Huh.
Place was completely packed.
Wow.
It was just insane packed. We got to play like the third spot out of the four bands, which was the sweet spot.
Yeah.
So we go up there and we play, and people were treating us like we were freaking like the Beatles or something. It was just insane. And they were like, are
the
you all
Black
from
Shades at Shea Stadium?
Yeah. It was crazy.
As close to the Beatles as you can.
They were like, are you all from New York City? You're like, no, we're from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Yeah.
But then the following night, we played in Manhattan again to like five people. It's like,
so
oh my
note
God.
To self, don't play Manhattan.
Yeah.
That's cool. But that, like you said earlier, you really cut your teeth in that band.
Yeah,
and it really kind of, you found, I guess, massive amount of purpose.
Yeah, that's
for
exactly
your
right.
Musicianship
yeah.
and everything. When the Black Shades, not necessarily ended, but just kind of slowed down or whatever.
Yeah, it was active. Yeah.
where did you go from there? What was your next step?
Ooh, I was just kind of like, what do I do? Yeah. You know, it's just like, because these
at that point, you're like, what instrument do I want to play? And yeah. What band do I want to play with?
Well, what happened was like the band had disbanded, but we still had a cassette tape release show.
Oh.
So I had to learn how to like program bass guitar parts and drum parts for these songs. And that's how I learned how to, you know, I learned about MIDI, and then that's whenever I started doing a solo project called Chuck Falcon and the Machines.
Right.
Where
so instead of just walking on stage with an acoustic and doing something pretty mundane, you actually gave it some flair and
I had a drum machine that was also a sequencer, and it sent out MIDI messages to two synthesizers, and then I ran my guitar through this bass amp, and it sounded like uber massive, like you know, like T-Rex or something, Mark Bolan.
That's
and
cool.
It's oh man, it was great. You could take the guitar and just go chop the start of the neck on the E string, go. No, it was so good. Everything would like shake. It was great, but it was such a pain in the ass to bring all that shit up.
I can imagine.
Oh my god! I played over at what was it? The Big To Do Fest. I was I played first at like 11 a.m. or 10 a.m. or something. There I was wheeling up this 8x10 Ampeg up these steps by myself, and it totally sucked. Yeah, but like I played and like.
But at least you stretched your strings before you.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's I stretched the strings, and it was cool. I had some friends come out, and they're like, "Man, that was really cool. Yeah. That was a lot of gear."
Yep.
I was like, "Yeah, that's a lot of gear."
Yep.
Yeah.
So you did that for what? Just
yeah, I did
a little
that for
bit.
About a year. Yeah. I did that for a year, and like one thing that was really cool, like in that project, we'll see. The Black Shades still had like gigs like out of town, like big things. So I was like, I would call it the Black Shades, even though it was really just Chuck Falcon the Machines, because just for production reasons and like, you know,
recognizable.
Anyway, right. Yeah. One of the gigs was a really, really cool gig where it was in Winston-Salem at this place called The Garage.
Nice.
And we played with a band called The Ghost Wolves. They were a two-piece band that we met up with at South By. But the band that was headlining was called the Dex Romweber Duo,
cool.
Which was a huge influence. I mean, I saw them at Third Man Records. Like Jack White was like, you know, the White Stripes were like my thing. You know, that was it. But then I actually saw like Dex Romweber, and like they put on a cool show. We hung out in the. I mean, whenever I like before the show, like I was like, Dex, you're freaking awesome. Da da da. You know, whatever. And he's like, okay, cool, whatever. Just kind of shooed me away. Well, I played. Ghost Souls played. And then Dex played. Then we like after he played, it's like, hey, come over here. So we were hanging out in the green room. He's like, hey, you're a really good songwriter. You're really really good. And then we just started talking about like Elvis and like Chuck Berry and like you know Eddie Cocker and just all these rockabilly guys.
Yeah.
And just like it was great. It was a fantastic thing.
Well, that really helped launch you into you know, where you went from that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely
your
gave
confidence
me,
must
yeah,
have been through the roof.
Yeah, yeah. Then what I
that's cool.
Yeah.
Isn't it great when you meet people you admire and they're actually nice
to
you?
They're actually cool, because I've met some they're just like just
I have too.
Like what?
And as a drum tech I used to set up for clinicians things.
Yeah.
And these guys would fly in and
they're all
you know, they're
cool.
On the cover of Modern Drummer. They're famous people, and I'd be like, they were the biggest assholes you could ever meet.
Yeah, it's just because they're just too cool.
And I'm like, dude, I'm here working for you.
Yeah,
you know, at least be nice to me.
Yeah,
treat the fans that way. But
yeah, that was wild.
That's a good story though. That's a I think that really can make or break somebody, because inside you're always going to be questioning. Your talent,
there's always that.
All of it. And to have someone you admire just almost throw gasoline onto your fire of confidence, that's all it takes.
Yeah, it was great. And like I just like that'll keep me going for several years. And
so you do that for a while on your own.
Yeah.
And then where did you go from that?
From that, I kind of slowed down, and let me see. I was still doing that, but what was happening was we started running. I didn't really have the people to play with, so what I started doing was basically like hosting house shows at my place, at the Falcon's Nest, and it was just doing that. I was watching a lot of bands come in and out, and like, that was. So I was doing that for a while, and then my buddy Michael Thomas kept coming over here, or kept coming to the house, and we were like into the Everly Brothers. We were just randomly practicing our harmony.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we were just practicing that. I mean, it was like, it looked super goofy in the room, just like two guys, and they're going, you know, doing that. So, yeah, we were
but
doing
that's
that.
That's the beauty of
yeah.
music.
Yeah, we were doing that.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah. We did that, and then, like, we'd always practice on Mondays, then go get the cheap mellow pizza, because we lived right next door, walk over there, get the pizza, then come back, harmonize some more. And then we started having some actual songs.
Yeah.
And then we brought Dustin and Dustin and Toby in, and that was the Pretty OKs.
Cool. And that was around 1 year. What year was that?
That was
not too long ago.
Yeah, I'd say 2000. Like, we ended in, I guess, the fall of 2018, and I'd say that at the end of 2016 or beginning of 2017 is when that band started. So it was like a short run,
right? But again, another band you're involved with where the advertising was well done.
Yeah,
the Elvis with
the Elvis, pastel
colored hair, and
yeah,
I mean, it was just well done. Like,
thanks.
It's just, you've really got a good vision on the art sense of all of this. You know,
I'm always like pacing the floor. It's like, would somebody else think this is cool? Like, because if they're like walking by, like seeing like a,
well, if no one ever told you, I would say it's safe to say yes. I was one of them.
Cool.
I was here. I was in this very hallway here at Spencer's, and I was
walking, you saw the
down
poster.
And one of the posters yeah. was, I was like, that's cool.
That's awesome. That's very cool.
But I get that stuff.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you were also involved with Jamie Resch.
Oh, yeah.
And
that
the frontman. Was that prior to that, or kind of in between?
That was probably Chuck Falcon and the Machine days. God, when was that? That was probably like 2013.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
And Jamie has an episode of
yeah,
the Sound
yeah,
Atlas,
yeah.
So she may have mentioned that. I'd have to go back and listen to it. Mm. There's so many episodes now, I can't.
Yeah, I was like, man, there's like, 40 plus things going in there
it's
now.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So you did that. What did you, were you the bass player in that band?
I played guitar in that one. That was like one of the only bands that, like that and Downtown Handshake were like the only bands that I wasn't a singer in. I mean, it was good just to like
just
chill out,
chill.
You know. And I was able to just, I don't know, since, I think, I basically, I mean, I love playing that band, but I've used that band to test out guitars on.
Right.
Because I would always get new guitars in, and I was like, I'm feeling this one this time. I had just gotten a Stratocaster, and I've never, ever liked Stratocasters, but I found one that I really, really liked. I did that, and then, I had the Strat, then I plugged it into this amp. It was a big 15-inch speaker, so it had this big, round sound. But then, I only wanted to play Stevie Ray Vaughan type stuff, and I was just like, I would turn all of her songs into scuttlebutt, Texas blues. And what was cool is Dustin, he's such a intuitive drummer. He switched his stuff. He played I think his name's something Shannon. I think he's the Mike Shannon or the drummer from the Double Trouble.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. But he just followed in. He's great.
So you're doing that, Jamie Resch and the Frontmen.
Yeah.
And you were also doing the Chuck Falcon and the Machines around the same time frame.
Yeah.
And when did the Rocky Horror Band come about?
Oh, yeah.
Like that, you said that was 4 years ago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that was, what happened was, okay, I've always liked Rocky Horror ever since I first saw it in middle school.
Yeah.
I didn't really know exactly what it was about. I just thought it looked cool.
Yeah.
And I knew the music was
cool.
You
didn't get that there was this gigantic culture.
Oh, no, I had no idea.
Hardcore fans and the showings and acting out and the theater stuff.
Yeah, I had no, and I still haven't went to one of those.
You gotta go.
I know, they have it here
at the Capitol Arts.
Yeah. I loved the music, and because it had a rock and roll punk type vibe, because they had the leather jackets and people just being crazy.
Yeah.
And just, it was awesome. And they had aliens and stuff. But
well, it's the music was cool, but it also had this theatrical vibe, but yet in a almost Halloween-y vibe to world. And
yeah.
You put all those things together, and you really can't go wrong.
Oh, it was so good. So what happened was, like, I made a Facebook status, like, hey, does anybody else think it would be cool if there was, like, a Rocky Horror Band? And I think, like, the first, like,
sure enough,
five or six people, they said, yeah, I do. And then, like, so then the band was formed.
Well, have there been many people in the band?
Oh, there's been in and out.
I figured that.
Yeah.
Because I know Riley.
Yeah, Riley was in it.
And then David was in it, or still is in it.
Yeah.
Cindy Darst was in it.
Yes.
Or I guess still is.
Yeah.
But anyway, when that got started, when you put that together, who was in the original?
There was me. There was Lauren, my girlfriend.
Yep.
There's Toby. There's a guy named Trey Whiteley. He was the original drummer for like the first 2 years. And then Colin Hancock from Sugar Daisy and
Heron and Crane.
Heron and Crane, yeah. And yeah, that was the very first lineup.
Okay.
And then I think the next year it was the same. And then after that, Colin left, and Trey left, and then Riley came in, and Josh London came in.
Right, and Riley Finwood.
Yeah, Riley Finwood
was
yes.
the drummer for Heron and Crane.
Right,
which I was heartbroken when that band broke
up. Oh, I know.
Up.
They're such a good band.
But I actually talk to her every now and then.
Yeah.
She's in Virginia now.
Yeah. Oh, also David Stites. He was in it from the beginning, too.
That's true.
Yeah, he played bass on Sweet Transvestite so I could just rock the mic. And then he also did, like, he did another song on there where it was, like, where he was singing. But he's, like... Let's see. He would just do those parts in the beginning, and now he's like just straight up bass.
The full bass player.
Yeah, full bass player. Because like what happened was like I ended up breaking my pinky a year or so ago, and I couldn't like I was in a full cast, so I couldn't play at all. So I
bum bum.
Yeah. So I had to only like rock a mic, and then I guess last year we couldn't find a guitarist because I just wanted to rock a mic again, nobody schedule lined up, so I did the guitar.
All right, fine.
Yeah, I was like, all right, I'll play guitar, what I normally do. And then there was, I guess Riley left, and Josh Riddle, he's in. And Farron, there's a girl named Farron Marlowe who was in the band in the beginning, too. Then
it's okay.
Yeah, then after she didn't do it the first year. Or after the first year, it was Ariana in it all the other times.
Okay.
So now everybody's accounted for.
There you go.
Yeah.
And now again, you've been doing that for like 3 or 4 years at this point.
Yeah.
And is it really just for special occasions Halloween and
we've been practicing and then we're planning on doing like something in the summer or in the spring because
so you might
like,
make a little more of it than just like a periodic thing
because we love the music and so like,
well and again it's like it's a cool show
it's a cool
really
show, yeah.
bring it out like the attire everyone
yeah
you know, gets
I love
dressed
the attire
up
and, I love it
I mean that's cool
that's where like from my first experiences like with makeup and like Lauren always did my makeup and this past year was the first time I was able to do mine so I can there's plenty of great tutorials out there now you can I
there
can just
is
do it,
I know a couple of people that do those too
yeah
so you've been doing that for a while but it was kind of a side project it really does kind of you know, you devote time to it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It is something of importance, and it's still going today. Yeah. Are we going to mention the Christmas, the Slayer?
I mean, it's okay. I mean, I think that's going to – I think to
this
get
– past Christmas, as we're speaking,
yeah.
you guys did that band, but in a Christmas theme.
Yeah, Slayer. We learned, like a lot of, a lot of songs that I really like. I mean, we all like them, but – after you play them and they're
you made them cool
it's like yeah well I was able to we played like my one original Christmas song that I wrote called On Christmas I'm Gonna Kiss You and it's so we did that and then the rest were just we did you know, like the Ramones song. We did Wham. We did Dick in a Box because it's a Christmas song.
It sure is.
Yeah, because it said, it's Christmas, hearts open wide. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, and then the Pretty OKs, like you were mentioning earlier, around that same time frame, correct?
Yeah.
And how long did that name last before it transitioned into modern day Daddy Sisters?
Well, what happened was I was playing with Foya on the... Well, I was playing bass with them just like on and off for a couple years. Like...
And for anyone listening that doesn't know, that is Future Friends of Young Americans.
Yes.
Or is it Americans or America?
Future Friends of Former.
Former.
Future Friends of...
Future Friends of Former Americans?
No, Future Friends of... Former Friends of Young Americans. Yeah, you had it right. Sorry.
Future Friends of Young Americans.
Yeah,
that's Americans or American?
I mean, it's Americans. I got in trouble with the band because I introduced the band as the wrong name because it was America, but and then I said Americans, or it's like I get it confused. There's a plural.
It's a handful.
Yeah, it's like...
Toby, mm-hmm. They just recently moved to Pennsylvania.
Right.
I caught you guys at Tidballs one night. You were on bass.
Yes.
It was one of the best shows I'd seen in a long time. And I posted something on Facebook like, look, I know this band's been around for a while, but this was fantastic. And this is now my favorite band. And then he was like, oh, we're moving to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But she got a job.
She got a really good job.
Where at?
At UConn, University of Connecticut.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so
they're just basically in the Connecticut, Pennsylvania area.
Yeah.
But he's still going. Toby's booking shows.
Yeah, he's doing they're like he's changed it to the band's just called A Former Friend.
Yeah.
And I guess that name is like sometimes he'll play it solo and then sometimes he'll
play. Well, I love what he said about it. He's like, you know, I was born in Arizona and raised in Kentucky and now he's spreading the message up in the I guess I wouldn't say that's New England, but maybe it's something of that nature.
Yeah.
But that's cool. And you were part of that.
Yeah, I was
but kind of like as a friend,
right?
Helping out, kind
of
thing.
Yeah, like Toby, he was my neighbor. Like we moved out over there next door.
Oh, that's
to
right.
Him.
Yeah.
And like Ari, she was, she was already playing with them. And I was talking to Toby on like, because we think Pretty OKs are still going. I told him, I was like, hey, I was thinking like be really cool if actually that's whenever I started telling him about like. You know, he was one of the first people I opened up about gender fluidity and stuff, and I was like, wouldn't it be cool if there's like, you know, a girl band
right.
In town? And like, I was thinking, you know, Ari's playing drums now, and like, I'm only playing bass in bands, but like, guitar is more home to me.
Yeah.
Maybe she'd be down to do that. And he was like, yeah, that sounds like an awesome idea. So, like,
so that was it.
That
was like, how it kind of got started.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as Daddy Sisters, right?
Yeah, the Daddy Sisters. Yeah. So last.
But it came out of the Pretty OKs, right?
Well,
I mean, it kind of sparked it, I guess.
Maybe like,
because it wasn't too long ago.
Oh no! Like what happened? Like there was like, let me see. Like the band we played like the Pretty OKs played our last show and we're kind of and I like just no more shows were booked and then like me and Ari were playing and I kind of wanted to play something more hard
right
so I just didn't book anymore for the band and like I kind of like I basically quit the band that like I started I don't kind of so that's whenever like me and Ari like started playing
right
and then we did like you know started building this stuff up and like Ari was you know she's you know. Yeah, she's an awesome drummer. She's very rock cool.
Very
rocker.
Good. And I
night
I saw you guys at Tidballs with Future Friends of Young Americans. I actually helped her bring her drums up. Like I helped the first band take their drums off, and then I started bringing her drums. So I was like, I'll just bring them to you. She was like, I've never had help. and that was cool. And I sat there and watched that show with you guys in Future Friends.
Yeah,
and it was great.
Like,
but she was really,
really good.
I was really impressed, and so as we're recording this, she has taken a job, or
right? Yeah, she like I guess it was about a month ago.
Yeah.
Like where since they're getting ready to scoot, you know, like because they're getting ready to go to like move up there close to, well, like from what they told me that they were like going to be scooting, living close to Toby and them because Ari dates Beck and Toby's son and Toby and Beck haven't like really been separated since they've been like
right.
So they're wanting to go up there, I guess get to a different city or something because it's kind of close to Boston and like just be close to the fam. So
all those states are small; you can get to stuff very quickly.
Right, right. So they were wanting to like I don't know, just have a change of scenery and so Ari, you know, quit.
Started it was you and Ari.
Yes.
On guitar and vocals, her on drums.
Yes.
And that's when the band took hold. And again, it's like you immediately are out there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There wasn't there. This lull time of 6 months before you were stage ready. It didn't take no time.
Yeah, I think our first audio recording that I have on my phone was August. And then we played our very first show in October.
Yeah.
And
just
then,
not very long. Like you immediately had the vision, the idea, and you ran with it, and you got it up and running.
Yeah.
And so the Daddy Sisters was born in like the fall of 2018.
Yep.
Correct.
Yep.
And as we're taping this, that's not very long ago.
No.
But less you've than done a lot, and you've played a lot of shows. You've done a lot of stuff, but she has left the band.
Yeah, it's a bummer. But,
and you've got someone now.
Oh yeah, we got like Dustin, who I played with in the Pretty OKs and the Jamie Resch band. He's like, he's awesome. He's such a great drummer.
I haven't caught you live yet, and I apologize for that. But it's like every time you're playing a show, I'm somewhere else, or I can't go, or whatever it is. But I'm coming.
Oh, cool.
I will be at one soon, I promise. But as we're taping this, you played last night in Nashville with the Mighty Jabronis.
Mighty Jabronis,
one of my absolute favorite bands.
Yeah, so good.
And I was telling, I interviewed Josh Riddle and Melissa Jones from Wet Eyed Liars not that long ago.
Awesome.
And your name came up, and we were all like, oh, my God, this is the band. Aww. I have to say that I think on a local music standpoint, I've talked to a lot of people in these podcasts and just in general. Daddy Sisters keeps coming up.
Oh, man, that's great.
Kenzie Crow said that
Kenzie's
she
great.
Puts your song, When I Grow Up, I Want to Be a Girl, on repeat.
What?
Over and over
that's
and over.
That's super
and
cool.
And I caught myself doing that the other day because it's like, that's all you've released so far, right?
Yeah,
you just got the one song out, but it's on Bandcamp.
Yeah, it's on Bandcamp, yep.
So, clearly, anyone listening to this can look up the Daddy Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Just Google the name, I'm sure. But you do have a Facebook page.
Yeah, the Instagram.
You have an Instagram. You have the one song on Bandcamp.
Yeah, Bandcamp. Like,
so what is going on, and what is your plans as of this very moment, and what does the future have in store?
Well, we have April's pretty well stocked full of shows.
Yeah.
But my plan is to record the rest of the songs and release an EP.
EP?
Yeah, because we have, I don't know, like 8-9 songs now. Maybe more. I mean, if you include covers, there's like 10.
Right. You've got enough to do the shows, obviously, because you've been playing a lot of gigs.
We always try to fit in some of the Cramps because, you know, Lux and Ivy are like, that's the king and queen. They are like my favorite. Love them.
Awesome.
Because they're like lovers of music and the show and all that. But anyway, we're gonna be recording like an EP, and like I guess like touring that. We have like some shows coming up, all throughout April, and then
this is in general. 2019 is looking pretty good.
Yeah. So far, so good. Yeah. We have like this pretty cool festival we're playing in. In August, called Sweet Time, and I went to it last year. That's where I first saw the Mighty Jabronis. I was like, "What's this wrestling band?" And it's like this guy's like crushing my skull with his palm, and there were so many good like like rock and roll and punk bands. So that's basically what it was like rock and roll and like a 2-day festival thing.
They get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my favorite thing, because like there's not like a lot of like rock and roll bands around. It's just like they're just not.
It's a variety.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
I think the punk area, it's definitely kind of
that's you're right about that.
So we are nearing the end of our podcast interview. Yes. And I like to always ask the question of what are you into in this music scene? What's out there right now that you're a fan of?
Got like Wet-Eyed Liars, freaking awesome. I love People Proof.
Yeah.
I love Sis. I played a solo show with them recently in Louisville. They're doing really cool things.
I interviewed her. Her episode is in the can. I don't know exactly the day it's coming, but it should be aired before yours. But yes,
there's I like about everything. I mean, Solo Disco Force.
Yeah.
That's another like awesome band. I haven't got to see like any of Kinsey Crow. She's working on a new project.
Yep.
But I remember Kinsey Crow and the Flaming Hots. They were awesome. But
she's a huge Jack White fan.
Oh yeah, you're
so
right.
The two of you were heavily influenced by him, and
I think
musically it shows. You definitely have that like drive and the vision is strong. Mm. And I know Jack's a huge influence on both of you.
And then of course, like, you know, I'm good friends with the Josephines, and they're pumping, they're doing some awesome stuff.
Hard
like,
to just, deny what them boys have done.
they're doing some cool stuff.
Yep.
But yeah, there's tons of good music here in Bowling Green, like I don't want to leave anybody out. I mean, I love, like, you know, Sugar Daisy's doing the thing, and like it's awesome. Everybody in Full Frontal Saurus.
See, some people hate this question. I know you can.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many good ones out there.
But you've also been in a lot of good ones that have been a part of this scene. So,
I saw your saw you one time over Tidwalls.
As of
like
this episode, 48 hours ago, I'm finally like, I'm in a band.
That's awesome.
So I'm hoping my band and your band
can team up at some point.
That would be great. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's hard to go back because I've been in this music scene for 30 years now.
Mm.
So I've seen a lot of change. I've seen a lot of bands come and go. The one thing that holds is this music scene is incredible.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And you are extraordinarily a part of it, especially since 2007.
Oh, yeah, 2007, yeah. That's a long time.
You have done a lot of good for this music scene, and like I said, it is top. Like, you're top of almost everyone I've talked to in the last couple weeks.
That makes me feel good.
I think what you've got is a really good thing, and just keep doing what you're doing.
I will. Yeah,
I appreciate
it.
I'm influenced by you as a musician and a performer. It is an incredible thing to just witness and meet people like you, but you're very much part of this music scene, and I can say it on behalf of many others that we thank you for what you've done and what you've contributed to.
Thank you. That's like I'm just being me. Yep. I'm glad that people are liking it, because I like it, and then if other people like it too, that's freaking great.
Well, yeah, believe me, it's out there.
Cool.
Before we wrap, is there anything I missed? Is there anything you wanted to say? Anything you wanted to talk about your music or the music scene in general?
Bowling Green has a great music scene, and like I'm glad to be part of it.
Yep.
There's just great people here. Not really. Like, you covered a lot of good bases. Yeah, you're good.
We definitely covered your timeline, and we covered modern day. So
yeah,
it's a podcast, and it's kind of capturing a moment in time. So this is a great time to have sat down and talked to you. And I wish the Daddy Sisters nothing but love and respect, and I hope the future is very bright.
Cool.
Do what you do, and thank you, Chick Falcon, for sitting down with me today.
Captain. Cool.